I really wanted to do that muscle up. And I think I still have that one video of when I did my first muscle up, and I was so, yeah, so screaming around. I think everybody knows that feeling.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Gorilla Nation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is one of the most successful calisthenics, weighted calisthenics coaches in Germany and Austria. Somebody with a lot of experience in this field, somebody with an inspiring story and transformation himself. I'm really happy to welcome you to the show, Nick Tibosek.
Thanks for that announcement. Happy to be here.
So we were talking about this podcast episode for a long time already, and I felt like it's the right time. You listeners appreciated well the last episodes where we shared a lot of content about programming, about like deeper stuff, I would say, deeper sports scientific stuff. So I'm really looking forward to an episode full of content, because I know, Nick, you're somebody who has a lot of knowledge, who invested a lot of time and money in his in knowledge in your sports career as a coach. So I'm looking forward to you to share a little bit of your knowledge.
I'm happy to share. Let's get it on.
Awesome. So yeah, but first, for the people who don't know you, do you want to present yourself? Who are you? Where do you come from?
Well, I'm Nick. I think for the calisthenics community, I'm an old man with my 30 years of living here.
Sure.
I'm into this since 2013, pretty much. I think I started like everybody in that time. I saw some Barstars videos and I was into it. And that's pretty much the stuff that why I started. Then I started training with some friends that escalated a little bit. We brought up the, at that time, biggest group ever in Germany with Calisthenics Wetzlar. Some people may still know that one, maybe the old dogs. We had very, very big group trainings that transformed into a sports club where I had to jump into coaching because of that. And so that's when I started really learning about coaching in 2014. And from that time on, it evolved by itself, more or less. And that's pretty much the background that I have. Now I'm training for myself since 2013. Coaching's pretty much at that time started somewhere there. I can't really say that because I wasn't really into that. It happened more to me that I planned it. But here I am now. That was actually in Germany. Now I live in Vienna. So you see me here in the Team Alpha Bar gym right now, sitting here. Some people may know this one from the WOP League. And that's the short version of it. I hope that helps.
Definitely. Something, as you said, you were really an influential person in the German calisthenics scene, brought together a lot of people in Wetzlar. Also people coming from different cities from further to train with you. So you really left your footstep, I guess, in the German calisthenics scene. And tell us a little bit more about your background. You also, what I meant at the beginning with your transformation. I still remember the photos that you share from the younger you to today. I think the physique was a little bit different. Tell us more about your physique transformation.
Well, yeah, that was definitely a little bit different to who I am now. Actually, in the beginning, when I started training calisthenics, I was at around about 115 kg of body weight, and I'm 186 centimeters tall. So you can imagine I was pretty fat. Before that, I was actually 130. Then I went into the German army. And as it is in the infantry, they really damage you. So I lost like 15 kg, but the food is also shit, so you don't lose that much. So when I left the army, I was like, okay, I wanted to learn a pull-up, because in the army I didn't learn it because I didn't know anything about training. And yeah, that was a little bit difficult there. So that was something for me that I really wanted to learn. And I started off at a little, it was not really a park. It was more like where the children's play. And there was something that you can call a pull-up bar, but it was not really a pull-up bar. And I teach myself to do my first pull-up. That was actually, I think it must have been somewhere in January in 2013. It's pretty close after I saw my first Barstars video. And from there on, it went on. I trained a lot. Didn't know anything about it. Actually, I did so much. Can I say bad words?
You can.
Okay, I did so much shit back then. But I think everybody did it at that time because nobody knew anything about training at that time. I think you remember that time too. So you just trained. And the harder, the better. And I went down to 90 kg of body weight, which was, I think, the first time in my life that I had a six-pack. And that was all I wanted at that time. But during that time, I really felt in love with the process of training. And I was like, fuck, it's not just looking good anymore. I just love doing this. So that was actually the time when I really went into this passion and really felt in love with just training, getting stronger, having a good time with friends during training and all that stuff. I think everybody who's into training knows how that feels in the beginning, especially in the beginning. And from there on, I always had a little bit of weight is going up, weight is going down and all that stuff. Because once you have been a little fatty, you don't have that completely. The transformation is not completely done after you lost some weight. Usually, yeah, it takes some time to get into these new eating patterns and really, yeah, make them yours. And it took some time for me to get into these eating patterns. And right now, I would say, like 8 years later, I'm here and I'm pretty happy with what I have. I'm at 100 kg roundabout right now. Sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less. I'm able to eat sometimes some ice cream, and also having a good steak or something. And I actually right now I'm at the point where I enjoy life and training at the same level. So I would say I made my transformation into this. I'm not a completely ripped athlete like everybody wants to be on the gram, but actually I have something that I can keep on one level, and I'm happy with that, I would say.
Cool. In the beginning, when you were watching the Barstars videos, was the main motivation the physique? Was it to look good, or was it to be strong, or to impress the girls, or what was it? You know, like,
I would say it was kind of looking like them, because I've never looked like that, except of, I think it must have been when I was 13 or something, round about that age. At that time, I was a pretty good runner, track and field and stuff like that. And that was the only time when I was pretty much lean in some kind of. It was mostly looking like that. And there was also this thing, I wanted to do a muscle up. The classic. Yeah. I was really into, I want to do a muscle up. I really want to do a muscle up. I was always like, yeah, okay, a front lever, that looks cool. Yeah, a flag also looks cool. But I really wanted to do that muscle up. And I think I still have that one video of when I did my first muscle up, and I was so, yeah, so screaming around. I think everybody knows that feeling. But I think it was these two things, and that changed over time. After like, I don't know, like 2 years, when I just had that physique that I wanted, I changed that into, I really want the performance. And that really changed the complete way how I approach training, because from that point on, I had to learn a lot more about how to get really strong and how to develop that without getting injured and all that stuff, because everybody knows that we all have that shoulder issue once in a time. Mm-hmm. And especially in calisthenics. And I also had that, and but I learned about it, and so now I can actually deal with that a lot better. Don't kill myself in training. That's what I teach our athletes, and that's the thing that we actually have. We all have to learn that during the time. Once you have the physique, you understand. Okay, there's a little bit more about that at the beginning.
Okay, get it. You already said calisthenics, the way we train, like the way also the professionals train today changed a lot over the years. And yeah, it has to do with of course the sport developing, with people like you offering coaching, etc. But back in the days, like everybody was just go hard, train as much as you can, like every day, all day, every day, you know, like all these quotes. And can you give us your perspective, how the sport changed, and what are the good things that came with it? The more scientific way approach of programming, of all this program structuring, training structuring.
I would say it's a lot easier to get strong in a short amount of time right now, because there's so much more knowledge out there. When we started, there was nothing. Especially for me, I didn't know anything about training. I had no background or anything. I was like, okay, what's YouTube giving to me? And that was actually some Hannibal for King videos and nothing else. And you may remember that the mad bars routines.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
It was like I mean, trade cards. Like I was collecting them and trying them out. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I tried so many of them and I failed on so many of these routines. Like, I don't know. So, I think I couldn't do most of them now. I mean, they were like, yeah, do 50 pull-ups. Who the fuck can do 50 pull-ups? Honestly, yes, you have some world-class athletes who can actually do that, but most people probably will not get to that point. And I think it's a very good way that this changed, that it is a lot easier to get into the sport. Especially as we have more information, but on the other hand, it's I think it's a little bit easier to get immediately to the right people who give you the information, because at that point you had people like all the YouTube stars on calisthenics. They had no clue about training at all. I don't want to offend anyone, but it was like that at that time. So they just gave you some routines. They thought that's good, but it was not like that was really good, you know? And nowadays it's a lot easier to get your entry into this and develop further. And I think that that's something that changed so well. And we're not done with that. Not even close, but it's so much better. And I think what also changed a lot was like a lot of people in the beginning were like, strictly calisthenics. It's not allowed to do anything else. And it's good that this approach changed a little bit, that people allow themselves to actually do something else. I mean, stuff like rotator cuff work and maybe some OHP to develop some more strength to do a handstand push-up and stuff like that. You know, people are a little bit more open now than it was then. People were so against weighted calisthenics in the beginning. When I look at that, how dare you put weight on it? How dare you to do squats? That's not calisthenics. Yeah, bro, but how are you going to load up an air squat or something? Yeah, we have to do pistol squats. Yeah, but that comes to an end too. So I think you remember that time. It was pretty hard to bring that into the sport. And nowadays, people are a lot more open to that. And I actually love to hear that and to see that people are ready to open themselves a little bit more up into this. And from this on, the whole community evolves from that. And that's something I really enjoy. So I think that's some very, very good stuff that it is like that right now, because information is out there. Everybody can get it. Of course, it's for most people very, very hard to cut the right pieces out of what they really need out of all that information. It's for a lot of people, it's very hard to get the right information in place. That's something that's, of course, it's harder now because there's so much information. You don't know what's right, what's wrong, what's the right one for my situation right now. But in the end, everybody's free to get some help at that point, you know? And that was something that also was in the beginning very, very hard for most people. Everybody was on that I'm the lonely wolf track. I don't want any help. So, and that changed also a lot in the community. And that's also something that I actually, yes, of course, because I make my living out of that. But on the other hand, you know, the whole community evolves from that because everybody's getting better and people are inspiring each other by their approach, by their achievements. And I think in the end, the whole community evolves from that a lot. So everybody is profiting from that, that it is growing so well right now. I hope I answered the question.
Definitely. So if somebody is asking you, yeah, Nick, where can I get some information to start? And you, like, out of some reason, you don't want to give him the advice, but what would you advise to our listeners? Where can you get some good information for the beginning? Of course, later, or if you have some competitive goals, or if you want to do it like really with 100%, and then coaching, of course, is the way to go. But we will talk about that later as well. But like for a beginner, where do they find the best information in your opinion?
Of course, in my podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, yes, we have the Strength and Skills podcast, which is very much about information. And we give a lot of info. I always tell people, if you listen very closely to the podcast, you don't need our coaching.
Okay.
We're just spraying. But on the other hand, I think to get information for the beginning, it's mostly needed to understand the principles in the beginning. So that there are like, let's say, six movements, which is vertical pulling and pushing, horizontal pushing and pulling, and for the lower body, pushing and pulling. And when you have that and add some unilateral movements to that, which is one leg or one arm movements, then you're very good in the beginning to have all that done. So it is for most people, it is in the beginning, like they want to do everything. And it's very hard to get all the informations in because yes, there are some places where you really can come from when you're a beginner. Like all these Reddit stuff, and all these internet platforms where you find some stuff. But I think the most important tip to get here is don't overcomplicate. Make it very simple. Make it really simple. Keep in mind, you don't need to train like 7 days a week. You don't. Four times a week is very much enough if you do it right. And actually we are sharing all that stuff in the podcast, and I wouldn't say there's this one source that you can go to where you find all the information needed. That's actually right now maybe the issue that we have in the sport, that it is not, there is no guide in the beginning. Maybe we should bring up a guide, a Gonation guide for beginners. Let's do this.
Yeah, but it's a big problem. Like, or what needed? It's a big desire, I guess, because calisthenics is a sport which has the danger or the possibility to become like gymnastics, where people are afraid of starting because it looks so elite and so professional. And that's a risk, in my opinion, because as a beginner today, I would still, even though there are a lot of information, I would still be kind of lost between the pros who share something like reps in reserve and all these terms, which I don't understand as a beginner, which seem like extremely complicated. And on the other hand, the people doing like reps until failure and just, yeah, it's difficult as a beginner, I think.
Yeah. So to answer the question in the end, I wouldn't say there's one single source that's really, really well. That's actually an issue. And I'm very sad about it when I realize it right now.
Yeah, like I'm always thinking that if we are kind to beginners, it's the sport will grow, because otherwise, like, of course, I like the community events where every year we meet up everybody, but I don't feel that the scene is like growing extremely. Like, it's maybe it's not necessary to work to grow extremely big. But I still would wish more new faces, new people in the scene. So this is why I'm always thinking, how can we do something for the beginners? Because it's hard to reach them, but they need the most help, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we need to get that in.
But that's something we can think about after the podcast. Otherwise, it will be 3 hours. You talked about unilateral exercises, which is something that I don't hear a lot. Why do you think these are important, and why do you give them to your athletes and to your coaches?
Actually, that's something. When you look at I think in the first. We first have to explain what's in a unilateral movement. Yeah. So in the end, unilateral, uni, that's one. Lateral is always on the outer side of your body. So you can see that's an arm or a leg. Mm-hmm. So it's one arm, one leg. So that could be something like a lunge, like an overhead press. And when you look at that, you usually have to load that up with some extra weight. Hmm. Yes, that's not completely calisthenics. I know that. to tackle that in the beginning. But how could you do a one-arm thing overhead? I don't know a lot of people who can do actually a one-arm handstand push-up. So also a one-arm handstand pike push-up will be very, very difficult. But to press something above your head, which can be a dumbbell, maybe at 10 kg or something, especially when you're a girl, maybe a guy starts at 20 or something, I don't know, wherever you start. Yeah. It's crucial to be able to stabilize your arms and your legs only at one point, you know, that you only have that one arm that has to be stabilized. That's mostly for health reasons, because at that time you can really focus on that arm or that leg. And that's something you have a transfer effect from that. When you are able to stabilize one arm, one leg very well, usually that helps you a lot to perform other exercises better. So especially when it comes to legs, I'm very, very, very a big fan of doing unilateral stuff. As when you look at the hips, it makes so much sense to be able to stabilize the knee, as that's something you hear a lot of very, very often from calisthenics athletes. Yes, but I fucked up my knee doing some stuff. I fucked up my back doing some stuff there. And that mostly comes from they just don't know how to stabilize that stuff. And this is why I always give stuff like that to our athletes. It's not that this is a main lift. So it's not the first exercise that we start with on a training day. So you may do some squatting patterns. Yeah. Maybe a back squat. And after that, you train some single leg exercises, which can be a lunge, which can be a step up, or if you're a little bit more experienced, which can be a pistol squat. So I see these things as some assistance for the bigger movements, which help you to stabilize this area very well. And the same is for the upper body. When you do maybe one arm rows on the rings at that point, yeah, go get your gonation rings. I'm a marketer. when you do the one arm rings, ring rows, that's also so helpful, because at that point, when you pull back, you can even squeeze a little bit more into that than if you would do it with both sides. So the little squeeze here and the rotating from your spine at that point is also a very, very healthy movement at that point to keep you healthy in here. So I usually use that stuff not to get really, really strong, because that's mostly done with very heavy bilateral exercises. So if you want to do a handstand push-up, you're not going to learn the handstand push-up from the one-arm overhead press. Mm-hmm. But the one-arm overhead press will teach you the movement pattern in a more healthy way. So it is a very good way to do it afterwards. When you did your handstand push-up training stuff, and then this is maybe some assistance you do later on. You don't even have to do that every day, but once a week would be a good choice. So that's something I definitely always recommend to the people, because it keeps you just healthy, because you can focus so much on the movement and you have to keep everything stable at that point. You know, I mean, everybody who did an overhead press knows, one arm overhead press, I'm sorry, knows how much you start bending and all that stuff. So at that point, you also learn so much about how to stabilize your spine, which is actually something that is so helpful in your real life, which is a little bit out of just training, you know, when you have to do something else in life. This stabilizing the spine will also something that you definitely will need that when you're getting old. Mm-hmm. So you profit from that so much. So in the end, all this stuff is not only about the performance right now. It is also about to keep you healthy so that you have a performance when you're old. Because I actually myself, I want to be able to do my handstand pushups when I'm old too. Like a 60 years old man doing the handstand pushups, looking at the young guys. Come on, guys. When I was old as you, I really killed that. The classic ones. But of course, the healthy side, that's it.
Nice. Like unilateral exercise, I often heard them in combination with fixing disbalances. It's the same thing, right?
Pretty much. But the other hand is a lot of people start doing them when they're already injured. Mm-hmm. I would say when you are injured, go to a physiotherapist. That's not my job. I wouldn't tell you anything about that because that's not my expertise. You know, of course I can help a lot of people with that stuff. And we do that with our athletes too, of course. But if someone comes to me, hey, I'm injured, can you help me? I would say, no, go to a physiotherapist. But I actually always like to tell people to do some stuff as pre so that you just don't get injured. So, of course, sometimes you will find some stuff where you just have disbalances. And of course, the unilateral movements help so much with that. But it's not like, yeah, but I did my one-arm rows and it didn't fix my disbalances. Yes, it's not like that. That's the magic pill or something. A lot of times you have to go really into detail with that stuff. This is why I'm not saying, yes, that's going to fix all your disbalances, because it's not going to be like that. You have to look at it very individual when it comes to that stuff and really go into detail with it.
Yeah, because my next question would have been if I have like a weaker left shoulder, do I when I do the unilateral exercise, do I need to lift heavier with the left shoulder, or is it important to keep both weights at the same weight, like this stuff?
I would actually always start with the weaker side, and maybe let's say you have a rep range. Yeah, like you say, okay, I'm going to do something in between 10 to 12 reps on that side. I would start on the weaker side, do as many reps as needed for your given goal, and then do this exact same thing with the stronger side.
Okay.
So that would be my approach. Cool. The difficulty at that point is when you go into science with that, there are also different approaches on that. But that is actually the approach that I always would do, because of course, I would always try to make both sides as equal as possible. But we also always have to keep in mind, you will always have a stronger and a weaker side. It's just in a range, you know. When, let's say, when someone is able to do 6 1-arm pull-ups on the right side, and it would be 5 on the left side, still do your 6 on the right side and do your 5 on the left side. That's not a big disbalance. But when there's just 1 on the left side and 6 on the right side, that's something that I would look into. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a very important part here, because people tend to really overanalyze that. And in the end, you will never have a completely symmetric body. It's not going to be like that, because you are maybe right-handed and are doing all the stuff in your normal life with the right hand. So there will be a difference to the left side. Of course, when you're playing football and your shooting side is the right side, yeah, guess what? Then probably there will be a difference in between left and right leg. I also have that. When I look at my legs, my right one is bigger than my left one, and it's even stronger. So yes, I don't have to completely make it symmetric, but of course, once I see that it leads to a problem, then I definitely have to work on it. Right now I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. With my left leg, there is actually an issue, and so I have to work on that.
Mm-hmm. Before we dived into this question, you were talking about the 4 weeks that it's totally enough to talk to train 4 times per week, which is really interesting for me. And I know in a podcast, I can never expect you to have the cure and the solution for everybody, every listener. If he does this, he will get the result this. But I would be interested in the perfect week for you in a program, 4 weeks, four workouts in a week. How should somebody train to get good results in weighted calisthenics?
Is the goal strength or hypertrophy?
Good question, but because we received a lot of questions concerning good physique and shredded physique, I would go with hypertrophy in this case.
All right, because there is a little different that we have to consider here. Okay, let's go into it. Hypertrophy is actually something we want every muscle group be hidden, like with a frequency of at least 2 times a week. So when you look into the science, usually a frequency of 2 to 3 times a week is best. When we consider that probably all of us will have a normal life too. We do have work. We do have maybe school, university, some stuff with the family. It probably will not be something that we will be able to train 7 days a week for the whole year. So for me, it's always something I want people to be consistent with their stuff. And having a 4-day week of training mostly works very well for most people. And this doesn't mean that there aren't people who are training less or more. And it also, I'm coaching people who are training more and who are training less than that. I just say that's a pretty good middle way for most people. So that's why I'm saying four times. The frequency of two, of like, let's say we want to hit the back two times a week, leads to, okay, we at least have two times a week where we have to hit the back. And of course, then we also have to hit maybe the chest two times a week. Then, I'm sorry to say that, guys, but I also train legs. Of course, you have to hit the legs too. And they have a front side and a back side. So I would split that up personally. Because I actually would say, to keep it very calisthenics, we hit the backside with some Nordic curls. And as we are doing weighted calisthenics, I would say let's do some back squats also. Added weight on a squat. Whatever you use there, you could also say let's do some pistol squats. It doesn't matter. It's just about how you hit the muscle groups at that point. So right now we have the horizontal pushing. And of course, with the chest, which is only hidden in the horizontal way. So we also have to think of, like I said in the beginning, we have vertical pulling and pushing. So we usually would have to do some vertical pushing to add that to the chest stuff. So there would be a possibility of maybe saying, okay, we can split stuff up. If we have a frequency of each muscle group that we want to hit of two, then we have to consider, okay, how much is usually needed to make a muscle grow? And at that point, science says, okay, it usually would need only one stimulus. So it would be possible, and this is something, please don't misunderstand me, it would be possible from a scientific way to do just one set and give the muscle the right stimulus. But probably that won't work. For most people, it won't work because the stimulus from one set, you would have to go so hard into failure to give that stimulus, you probably will not be able to do it. And I'm not saying that to make you being the hardest man ever. It's not because of that. It's probably more because most humans are just not able to do it. I mean, if you look into the bodybuilding world, which are absolutely the experts of building muscles, there is one guy, his name is Dorian Yates, a very old bodybuilder, but he was known for high intensive training. And he had just one set. But when you look into the YouTube videos, you do understand why he's just doing one set. That guy is killing himself. And actually, I definitely had hard training sessions in my life, but I probably never came to that level. And I probably never will come to that level. He's just, that's madness. So in the end, most of the time, you have to look into it because there's also another science view of that. That says, okay, somewhere in between, let's say 13 to 20 sets per muscle group per week is something where the muscle grows very well. Because at that amount of sets, people are giving the right stimulus. And that's something you can cut it in half and do like, Let's say we do the middle and say 16 sets of the muscle group per week. So there's one day we do, let's say back, we do like 8 sets for the back. And there's another day where we do 8 sets for the back. With what can mean like we have on the given day, three sets of pull-ups. Maybe three sets of tucked front lever rows and maybe like two sets of one arm rows on the rings, which would be a very good back workout for most people if you do it hard enough. Mm-hmm. And yes, everybody is like, but I can do so much more. Yes, you can, but you most of the time you don't need. most of the time people are training themselves into the ground and they just don't need it to grow muscle. No, if you go close enough to failure, and this depends a little bit. This is also the big difference to when you want to go for strength. Mm-hmm. When you go for strength, you don't go into failure. Mm-hmm. That's very important to understand. When it comes to muscle growth, failure is needed most of the time, at least once a time. I wouldn't go for failure in pull-ups, but I would actually go maybe for failure in the one-arm rows, because that's the exercise where you can get at least the chance to get injured is the lowest. You know, I think that's very important to understand at that point, that you go for failure with the exercises which are not so high in the risk to get injured. Because every time when you go into muscle failure, you are at a high risk to get injured. That's very important to say at that point. So for you to keep that in mind, frequency of two means we cut the amount of volume in half, do one half on the one day and one half on the other day. And when you over time learn, okay, this is not enough for me, you add one set per week. That's easy. Start low, go high. And then in the first week, you start off with like 16 sets. Next week, 17. Next week, 18. Then you have 19. Then you have 20. Maybe then you feel like, okay, I should deload, which is a week of just cut the volume in half. Have a low week, rest a little bit, come back with more energy and start again. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So that would be a very good way. And you can use that system for every muscle group that you are actually doing. So that could also be done with the front side, with the chest. Now, at that point, we also have to consider, oh yes, there's something that's called overlapping volume. So everybody knows that when you did some heavy dips, your shoulders are fucked too. So you're probably not that good in handstand push-ups afterwards because you're already tired. And that's called overlapping volume because the same muscle groups are already used at that point. So we have to keep in mind, okay, some of that stuff will tire us. And it's the same like when you did very heavy pull-ups. Your whole shoulder girdle is tired and you probably will not do the new dip PR or handstand push-up PR if you do it immediately afterwards. Probably not. So you have to keep that in mind also, that this will interfere with each other. So when you have like a pushing day where you have a little bit more focus on the chest, and then maybe another day where you have a little bit more focus on, let's say, shoulders, which is vertical pressing a little bit more. That doesn't mean that you don't do chest that day. You could do the handstand push-ups and maybe some normal push-ups afterwards. Maybe weighted. I don't care. Yeah. And to get that to the right point, you could also do the heavy dips on the other day and do some pike push-ups afterwards, which still gives some stimulus more to the shoulders, but it's not that heavy. Mm-hmm. So I would always start with the more heavy exercise and afterwards a little bit lighter. Like I already said with the pulling stuff, when I said, okay, let's start with some pull-ups, some tucked front lever stuff, and then do some one-arm rows. So that would be a good way to schedule a training during a week. So, and the same stuff you can also do for the legs. Start off with heavy squats, do some piston squats afterwards, and maybe some sissy squats in the end. Would be an amazing possibility to really kill your quads that day. And you just did three exercises. And that would be a very good possibility to do all that stuff. And you have to keep in mind, start low with the volume, go higher. What is also very important, You mentioned that in the beginning, some stuff like reps in reserve, RPE. To mention that a little bit, reps in reserve is pretty much the same as RPE. We have a complete podcast episode about it, but to keep it very, very short, reps in reserve two means you have two reps in reserve. You could do two more reps. RPE 8 is the same as reps in reserve 2. So the whole thing of RPE ends at 10. If you had an intensity of 10, you killed yourself during that set, you couldn't do one more rep. There would be no way to do that. That's a 10. And for you to know, to give the right stimulus to the muscle, you have to keep your sets in between a range of somewhere in between 6 or 7 to 10 in an RPE rating system, or reps in reserve 4, 3, 2, and 1 or 0. So that's the very important part to keep that in mind. So that it should be heavy. It should be hard. You need to give the right stimulus to the body. There are exercises that wouldn't go for a 10, like a back squat. Killing yourself there is something, the risk of getting injured is too high. Kill yourself later with the pistol squats and the sissy squats. No issue with that. Maybe with the pistol squats, okay. But let's say lunges, that's an easier one. That's not so demanding for the knees. But that's also very important. So for you to keep that in mind, frequency of two during a week, total amount of sets up to 20, and the right intensity, yeah, coming up from an RPE 6 up to 10. So I have to say one thing to the 6 in an RPE 6. This is only when your rep range is very low. Because when you do like two reps on the back squats with 200 kg, let's be crazy. Mm-hmm. And it would be an RPE 6 for you. The stimulus is so high on the muscle that it still will grow. When you do like, I don't know, let's say push-ups, and you did it with, I don't know, let's say 20 kg on the back and you still have an RPE of 6, it's probably not growing. So there I would go for a little bit, yeah, like a higher RPE. That's very important to say. There are exercises that you shouldn't go for a high RPE, and there are exercises that you should go for lower RPE. But that's a complete big field. But I had to mention it.
Interesting. So you also talked about the deload week, which is makes sense in every X week. You will tell it, but you said that we cut the volume in half, you said. Does that mean we do the same amount of sets, but cut the rep range number in two, or how is it meant?
That's very, very individual, because deloads really depend on in which phase of your training you are right now. So when I have someone who's training for a competition which is probably one rep max, I cut down the intensities. So they do it lighter. They do the same volume. Mm-hmm. They do it lighter. When someone is in a hypertrophy phase, it makes most of the time a little bit more sense to cut down the volume, which means less sets, and work from there, because they're like, you could say they're like two different types of fatigue. Like there's the central nervous system fatigue, which is, in the end, the central nervous system is the system that wants your body to stay alive. So when that really gets tired, that's when you have less energy output. And that's actually what you usually feel when you had few weeks of really hard training when you're like mentally really exhausted and like, I'm done. I don't want to go into training because I'm so killed. Everybody knows that. It's different to just having a little bit of pain and being a little bit, yeah, just damaged, you know? Mm-hmm. That's different. Everybody who trains knows that. And usually you have this central nervous system fatigue a little bit more when you have higher intensity. So that comes with higher, with more with real strength training. When you come for hypertrophy, it's more like the muscles are tired. And also this loads up and also fatigues the central nervous system over time, but not as much as the high intensity would. So this is also a little bit depending on how much load you are putting on the spine. Mm-hmm. So you can always keep in mind every exercise that loads the spine will fatigue the central nervous system a little bit more than exercise that don't load the spine. So you probably are not so fatigued from the central nervous system from pull-ups because the spine is not loaded. You're just hanging there. You're probably also not so much fatigued from stuff like dips. You're more fatigued from handstand push-ups because the spine has to stabilize the body in the air a little bit more. And of course, with everything where you load up the spine with maybe like a barbell or something, like in back squats. Mm-hmm. So that definitely, you will feel that. This is why all the people always think, yeah, but when I do back squats, when I put them into my training, that kills my training. Now that it's not the case that it's the back squat's fault. It's just you're not used to this amount of fatigue and you have to get your body to get used to it. So to get back to the point, it's such a big topic, you know.
And it's great to have the knowledge around it. So don't worry.
Yeah, it's needed. To have that here, I would usually always, when you are in a hypertrophy phase, I would just cut down the volume because hypertrophy is mostly driven most of the time by a little bit more volume than in strength phases. So in strength phases, I would cut down the intensity, and in hypertrophy phases, I would cut down the volume. I have to say at that point, before people come and kill me, this is very individual. And there are people who react better to less intensity. And there are people who react better to less volume. There are people who can keep intensity and just have to do less training days and stuff like that. There are so many different ways. In the end, I really have to say, I always try to find out what's best for my individual client at that point and work from there. And this is also most of the time very different from the phase that they are in. So I have seen people who really recovered so well when they didn't even train a bit in a week. And I have seen people who needed to train and keep the same volume, but with such low intensity, you wouldn't even think that guy trained. So it's all there. And in the end, I hate to say that, but you have to find out for yourself.
And this is the difference or the difficulty for pre-written programs, etc. All the programs that you can get, which is also something which is good for the calisthenics scene, etc. But this is the difference between a pre-written program and a coaching or a coach who analyzes your stuff and your videos and your physique, etc.
Absolutely. Yes, the program will work when you do it right. But that doesn't mean that a completely individual approach for you wouldn't work better.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Yeah.
That's true. Nice. A question, because the week this interview goes live is also a special week because our dip belt is finally coming online. And when we announced it, we received a lot of questions. When is the right time to start weighted training? When is the right time to switch from basics, broad body weight, to weighted? Mm-hmm. Do you have what would you respond to somebody asking that?
I would say that depends on the exercise. I would start immediately with back squats, even for beginners, of course, because most of the people, I have never met a person who can't do an air squat. Mm-hmm. And if you put the gun on their head, they are probably most of the time able to do like 50 reps on that easily. Mm-hmm. So to load that movement up, there's the best way to put some weight on your shoulders and do the back squat. So I would start with that immediately. Well, the upper body, it's a little bit different because most of the people, when they completely start over new, they most of the time can't do a pull-up or maybe just a few. Same for dips and maybe for push-ups. When you come up with that, you can't really say this is the one, the number where you can start weighted. I mean, we all have seen that. People are doing 10 pull-ups and people are doing 10 pull-ups. There's a big difference on technique. Mm-hmm. And for me, I always look at, okay, where's the technique? At what point is the technique? Is this technique a good technique that we can actually already load up? Would that be a good idea to put some weight on that? So usually most of the time not, because the problem that we have with the body weight exercises like dips and pull-ups, you can't just take weight away. It's not possible. I can't come over, hey Phil, I just cut off your leg, I think that's the better weight for your pull-ups, come on. Cut it off. That's not possible. So we are always at the problem that we already are at a something that's like more in the direction of a maximum attempt, especially when you're a beginner. So for me, I would actually recommend for pull-ups, before you start doing pull-ups weighted, make sure you can do arched back pull-ups. Really, really good arch back pull-ups with chest to bar. You don't have to touch the bar. I know some people can't, some people can, but doing proper technique, at least the chin over the bar with that, somewhere in between 8 to 10 reps. Then you can start loading. And start loading doesn't mean you start at 10 kg. Start loading means maybe 1 kg. And what I would also recommend at that point, make sure to weigh yourself before, because that can also be a little bit different. Maybe 1 week you had like, I don't know, 80 kg. The other week you just had a little bit more of lunch. then you're 81. That's already progress. And next week you can go for 82. Maybe then you have to load up 1 kg. Mm-hmm. So, It's a little bit difficult to keep it at one number usually, because it very, very much depends on the technique. And when you look at it, most of the time, it also depends on how heavy is that person. When you have someone who's like, I don't know, 70 kg, most of these people really learn pull-ups very fast. When you have a guy who's starting over there at 90 kg of body weight, he probably will not have such a fast progress on pull-ups. Mm-hmm. Because the starting point is different. He started 20 kg ahead. It's not that easy to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And that's also very important to keep that in mind. Of course, yes, we can come up with arm length and all that stuff now. But I don't want to go into that too deep, with, especially as we... In the end, it depends really, really more on your mental side, in my opinion. But yeah.
What is the secret or like the intention behind the arched back pull-ups? Because that's something that we see quite often with your coaches, with yourself. What's the intention behind? Because it's
For
quite
me,
unusual in calisthenics, I would say.
it was. I think it really now made it place, its place into the community. But for me, it's mostly about scapular control. Being able to really depress and retract the scapula, which means pulling the shoulder blades down and more into the middle, is something that is very, very needed when you want to stay healthy. It's not what I would recommend for a competition. There's a difference. It's the more healthy way for most people, but it's not the way where you move the most weight. So for me, it's mostly about scapula activation and putting it into the right place. That's why I always program that. And once you have that, you usually have such a strong shoulder girdle that you can allow yourself a little bit more of compensating. This is why I always do this to people. And I think that's a very important way, especially as I like to have people who are training for long term.
Okay. A lot of our community members are a lot into statics, and we received also some questions about the benefits for statics, or like it, just in overall the combination with statics. And you also work together with Dennis for the Strength and Skills podcast. You did a lot of stuff together, etc., etc. So and you're doing statics yourself in your trainings. So how do statics and weighted calisthenics play together? Where do they benefit each other? And how would you recommend to combine these two disciplines, I would even call them?
I would say weighted calisthenics really profits from a very, very strong shoulder girdle. And you develop a very, very strong shoulder girdle with statics, because that's where the power comes from. And on the other hand, people who are very, very strong tend to learn skills very fast. So the combination of both is most of the time the best way to develop something. The only thing is, how do you actually use it on a training day? So if your goal is to go into weighted training, of course, you start off with your weighted exercises and add on maybe some static exercises, maybe some front lever pulls after your heavy pull-ups. And the other way around, if your goal is to go for a front lever, it makes sense to train the front lever first and go for some heavy pulling afterwards. Of course, the heavy pull-ups after your front lever work will not be as heavy as if you would do them first. But at that point, you're using them as an assistance exercise, which means they assist the exercise. And the same way around, you know, when you go for a heavy pulling, and afterwards you go for maybe some front lever work, the front lever should assist you with the heavy pulling. So in the end, it's just exercise selection that and of course the order of the exercises that makes the difference.
So as everything in life, it's a question of focus. It's the question of your goals. If you want to, as you said, like if you want to compete in a weighted competition, in a one rep max competition, it doesn't make sense to do statics in front of every heavy workout and waste energy on it in the beginning.
Absolutely.
Cool. Another topic, last topic, because we're already in the interview for quite a while, which is good because there's a lot of interesting stuff in it. But what I saw that a lot of people were asking were about weight loss and weight gain. Like I have to admit, most of the people were asking about weight gain. But still, I think you can tell a lot about this topic. You have your personal experience. You have your the experience of your coaches. Yeah, I think everything that combined these questions was about shredding. So having a lot a low body fat percentage. The people were asking about shredding while gaining weight and shredding, of course, while losing weight. So what's your opinion on that? What's your best advice about weight adjustment, I would call it, with in combination with weighted calisthenics?
I think the most important part right here is it's all about calories in, calories out. So if you have an energy balance, that is, you're putting more calories in to your body than you're putting out, then you're probably going to gain weight. If you're putting less calories into your body, then you're actually burning, and you're going to lose weight. And the most important part to understand here is it's a bigger picture that we need at that point. So a lot of people who think they should shred actually should gain weight first. And this is not that I want people to get fat. Most, especially in the calisthenics community, people are not that muscular. This is not to offend people. This is, you know, I'm training in a gym where I see a lot of bodybuilders and a lot of natural athletes, as they are not taking steroids or something like that. So they're really into the science of building muscle. And most of them are definitely bigger than calisthenics athletes. They always make jokes about calisthenics athletes. They're not always making jokes, but very often, I have to say that. But because, especially for that reason, because people are doing calisthenics and having in mind that's the best way to build muscle. It's not. I have to say that. It's not the most effective way. You know, this is like someone is taking the train and someone is taking the airplane. You know, that's the difference. One is faster at the destination than the other. Both come there, but one is faster. maybe you saw a little bit more of the travel when you did the longer way. And that's also something good. So this is not like one is the bad way and one is the good way. This is just a different approach. And we have to say at that point, a lot of people misunderstand when it comes to weight gain, that weight gain shouldn't be about getting fat. So the best way to do this is to find out where is actually your calorie baseline. When you have the baseline, you have like, okay, this is maybe like 3,000 calories a day. This is my baseline. And from there on, you just take maybe 200 calories more as an intake, maybe even just 100 calories more, so that you have over time, like maybe when you go for a whole week, that you gained like 100 grams or 200, maybe 300 grams per week, and not more than that. And this is really to say that it's about the week, not the given day, because that can be fluctuate a little bit. But what we need is really the complete week, to go from week to week and develop some weight. And one day after maybe like 12, 16 weeks of bulking, you gained like 100 grams per week, which is maybe after 16 weeks, 1.5 kilos, and you gained that weight. And then you have to look again into the mirror. Am I happy with that? because the body can only build muscle, mostly only it's let's keep it that way. The body can only build muscle when you give him the intake, you know. Mm-hmm. When you want to shred down, you do the same thing into the other direction. You take less in than you put out. So cut it down on the one side. And I have to say that one thing that a lot of people maybe underrate is your protein intake. The protein intake is very crucial for weight loss, but most of the time also for weight gaining. I had athletes that I put up to more than 3 grams of protein per kg of body weight, more than that. And they gained weight, yes, but they didn't got fat. And that was the most important part right here. Protein is for the muscles. And I'm not talking about vegan, not vegan stuff. Protein is protein. Hopefully the scientific people don't kill me for this, but because I'm not going too deep into this.
Yeah, it's okay. Like that's the sense of the podcast to give like an overview.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think hopefully we're able to answer that question a little bit.
So it's also about the speed. Like if I reduce calories too much when wanting to lose weight, I also lose muscle because the is like. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understood right, if I eat too much when wanting to improve go up with weight, I need to stick with a small calorie surplus per week. If it's too much, I will gain also fat because the body is not able to build muscle as quickly as fat, I would say.
Yes.
And the same thing with weight loss. If I like you didn't say it, but like if I reduce my calorie intake too much, do I also lose muscle?
Yes. That depends a little bit on how low you go. And of course, how much protein you're giving to the body and how you put the stimulus to the body. Mm-hmm. To say that for weight loss, protein is the most crucial macronutrient for a muscle cell. So that's why we higher up that intake for weight loss and for weight gain. And what is also very important, when you are on a weight loss, this is why cardio is not the best solution for weight loss. Your body will be at the point that he says, okay, I'm getting less energy in than I would usually need. So I'm in a survival mode. And the body is designed to survive. So he will kill everything that he doesn't need to survive. And that can also be a muscle cell. So to give the right stimulus to the body, to make sure, okay, hey, body, kill the fat cells. Don't kill my muscles. You have to show the body that you need these muscles. This is why you actually need strength training in a diet, because you give the right stimulus to the body. Okay, I need that, bro. I need that. don't kill it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good good image, like the good conversation in your body, which makes it easy to understand. Cool. Yeah. What are your goals for the next month? Before we come to the quick questions, quick answers, it's always interesting for me. What can we expect from you in the next month? What big project do you have in front of you?
We have several projects in front of us right now. We are building this gym here up, and right now it's pretty underground, not a legal one, and we're gonna make it legal. So that's one of the things that's for the next months, not only 1 month. And with bubble coaching, we have some stuff coming up, like courses to educate people a little bit more. And that's the stuff that we are working right now. I don't know if we're going to be done after 1 month, but that's the stuff that we are working right now on.
Awesome. Great. Quick questions, quick answers. What's your favorite food?
Steak.
Steak. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog.
What athletes inspire you?
Ranjit Bachu, mostly. Little Beastum. Some Olympic weightlifters, actually. And also some strongmen.
Cool. What would you prefer? Rather have insane strength numbers, like insane lifts, or an awesome body, if you would have to choose?
Oh, fuck. That's a tough one. Ooh, I think the strength numbers, because it's so much easier to get the body.
Okay. Pull or push?
Oh. Lower body push, upper body pull.
Okay. Do you have a favorite exercise?
Oh, I think it's the squat. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the whole interview was really nice, and people build a connection, and now you're destroying everything in the quick questions, quick answers. But yeah, that's okay. Like,
sorry, guys.
Weighted or body weight, if you would have to decide for the rest of your life?
Weighted.
Weighted. Do you have a favorite book?
That's so difficult. I wouldn't say I have one. I have so many that I really like. I can't say. Oh, fuck. That's too tough.
Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite music genre?
Right now, I'm pretty much into electro music, but that changed every few weeks.
Okay. So you're open to a lot of music, different music.
I'm also a big fan of Coldplay. What can I say?
Wow.
No, I kid myself.
What's the best calisthenics event you've ever been at? And I know you've visited a lot of events.
Machbar Max Out 2019.
Wow. This year again, soon already, I think, in a few weeks. Do you have the exact date? 25th of September. I have it here.
Yes.
Yeah. And the final question, what's your message to the calisthenics community? What's your message to the listeners?
Think long-term when it comes to training. Be patient. Enjoy yourself. Train smart and hard.
Great. So, yeah. Of course, we will put all the podcasts, your podcast in the description, for the people who are interested in, but, in general, how can people get in touch with you? How can they learn more from you? How can they apply for coaching? Tell the people how they can reach you.
You can easily hit me up on Instagram, Nick_Thibu. From there, you just go on the link in the bio, which is usually bar-bellcoaching.de, and in the best case, /links, because there we have two different types. One is more for the people who are not into competitions, and one is more for the people who are very much into competitions. We work with both people, but the approach is a little bit different.
Awesome. So yeah, all the links are in the description to your Instagram, to your website, Barbell Coaching. And Nick, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks a lot for all the useful advice. I think it was really interesting, like especially the unilateral things were really interesting for me health-wise. You answered a lot of questions already beforehand concerning injury prevention, etc. So this was also really, really interesting. Big thanks for that. And before you can end the episode and say goodbye to the people, I want to say thank you to everyone listening to this till the end. 1 hour 20 I have on my clock, which is a long episode, which is good. I know a lot of people, a lot of listeners are requesting longer episodes. So and I think it was worth the time. It was really full of useful advice. So big thanks for listening to this till the end. If you want to support us, give it a thumbs up, helps a lot. And Nick, you can end the episode. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you for listening to the episode. I hope you had some fun. Give us some maybe if you liked it, share it on your social media. It would be amazing to get more people to get to know more about calisthenics, about training, because if you help us to help more people, everybody's helped a little bit more, and we can make this world a little bit stronger. Have a good one.